passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 19 of the Long and Winding Railroad, the show that looks back at the 1990s era of All Japan Pro Wrestling, the greatest in-ring product in the history of professional wrestling, in my humble opinion. And my humble opinion is that of one WH Park 9. Oh, that's my Twitter handle. I'm WH Park. That's my Twitter handle. I didn't get much sleep last night, so I'm a little tired this morning. And so, but it's okay. I'm going to get really fired up talking about the match we're going to talk about. Today is a special episode. One, it's the first episode of 2022. And two, we're kind of deviating from the normal formula. We're going to take a look at a match not from All Japan Pro Wrestling and not from the 90s. We're going to take a look at a match from the 2000s from Pro Wrestling NOAH. But it's all okay, folks, because the two people in this match are All Japan 1990s legends. They are staples. And to introduce this match is my co-host today, and that is a first-timer here on the show, and he'll explain why we're going to talk about this match. And it's the Brigadier of wrestling podcasting here at Post Wrestling. It's Martin Bushby. Martin, how are you?
Hey, WH, Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for, deviating from the normal format of the show to talk about this incredible match we're going to be dissecting today.
So why are we talking about a match from 2003, and why are we talking about a match from Pro Wrestling NOAH? Who are we going to talk about? Maybe that's first and foremost, who's in this match?
Well, of course, we're talking about two of the all-time greats, two of the gladiators of Japanese wrestling. We're going to be talking about Misawa against Kobashi and that all-time classic they had from NOAH from the 1st of March 2003. Just, there's many matches that they've had. There's many that you could pick from them, but this for me is my all-time favorite. So when you asked me to actually do the show, I was like, I wonder if he'd be able to cheat around the rules of his own show and talk about this one, because this is, I'd say, we'll get into the sort of like history of me watching it in a bit, but this is, I would say, one of my top five matches of all time, and this was a perfect excuse to go through it with all. And obviously, with you being, having this show and talking about these two in particular, and I thought, what better excuse to talk about this match than on this ship, on this very show?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it is Misawa Kobashi. Their history in All Japan Pro Wrestling speaks for itself. I mean, this is pretty much a continuation. NOAH, for the most part, especially from 2000 to about until the time of Misawa's death, is pretty much an All Japan promotion at this point. The All Japan in the 2000s and all but name is not what, Giant Baba had created. So it pretty much shifted over to NOAH at the time. So, I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's Misawa versus Kobashi. It's this match. And I'll talk a little bit about my own history with this match. There's a really funny story I have with regarding to not just me seeing this match for the first time, but for me actually showing it to other people in a group setting. So I'll get to that myself. But Martin, what's your history with, maybe also with you know, like Misawa and Kobashi, and maybe with the Four Pillars in general, but this match in particular.
Well, yeah, it's a funny one for me, because obviously back in the 90s when, you know, tape trading was all the rage and I was reading Power Slam magazine and getting all these, and my eyes were being opened up to all this different wrestling outside of WWF and WCW. I didn't have a ton of money, and there was this guy called Rob Butcher who used to do, he was one of the major tape traders over here in the UK, and because of my connection to WCW, I was mainly getting the New Japan tapes, like the Super J Cup and like the early G1s and stuff like that. And then obviously getting a bunch of ECW stuff. So in the 90s, All Japan was a bit of a blind spot for me because I only had so much money, so many tapes that I could get. I think I saw the classic, that tag match, Kobashi and Kikuchi against Crawford and Furnace. I think that was on a compilation tape that I got, but as far as most of the stuff, I wasn't watching it as it happened or a couple of years later. And it wasn't really until the Wrestling Channel started over here in the UK and they started showing Noah stuff and that. But even then, I'll confess, I didn't actually see this this very much we're about to talk about until about 7 years ago. Because prior to my involvement with the Lore and Post, I used to run my own podcasting network. And one of the series that we had on there was getting a variety of guests and talking some of their favorite matches. And it was actually Findlay Martin, I think he prefers to be called, rather than Finn, who was the editor of Power Slam magazine. He came on and said, oh, if we're talking about my favorite match ever, I want to talk about this one from Noah. And so I watched it. And then he went through it all and went through the history of All Japan and things with me and really opened my eyes up. So I went back, watched a load of other stuff, and I was like, wow, all this stuff's great, but nothing is touching that Noah match for me. So yeah, that was my history of it. I didn't even sort of like have my eyes opened up to this stuff till about 7 years ago, I think. But yeah, I'm really glad I did, and I'm really glad it was something that Finn recommended to me, and we went through the match together.
Awesome. So we'll be going through the match ourselves as well over the course of this show. But my own background is like I had been following All Japan from like the late 90s and just kind of going back in time as catching up on that stuff. But then Misawa forms Pro Wrestling Noah in about 2000 and then it's taking off. And so I'm following Noah pretty regularly. It becomes kind of like maybe one of my two favorite promotions at the time, along with Dragon Gate. And I'm following pretty regularly. And then I hear about this match, I think from like Dave Meltzer. I think he was like guesting on the Law, like, cause he would do the Sunday night shows with them. Like he'd do a spot on those shows and he talked about, oh, this match happened and da 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 da. And then it finally came available on the tape traders that I was using. And I got a copy of it. And this is like still VHS. So this is the era we're talking about. And so I got the tape and I'm watching it. I'm like, oh my God. Cause like, you know, like I think because of like, I'm using the same sources that probably Meltzer is, like he probably hadn't done a write-up about the big spots in the match. So I got the tape and like, I watched it kind of unspoiled as far as like what actually happened in it. And then I'm seeing some of the spots that are being done in this match, especially, well, and we'll talk about the big, big legendary one. And then I'm like, whoa, I gotta show this to other people. And so what would happen is like at that time in Toronto, the Law, live audio wrestling guys would host a Monday night wrestling party at this bar called O'Grady's. And, you know, people who've listened to, you know, the Law and post wrestling know that me and John, that's where we met when he was 16. And I remember this, he's like a teenager at this time. And he's at this night where I bring this tape. So we finished watching Nitro and Raw, whatever. I think probably just Raw at that point then. And then we stick this tape in. And, you know, there's a fair number of people who stick around for the Japanese tapes that people brought in, like myself and Dan the Muffler Vransky. And then, you know, a lot of people leave. But the people who stay, I think I'm going to say there's like maybe 7 or 10 people who stayed. And then we put this match on. And I've already seen it, so I know what's happening. But then, like, as people, you know, watching it casually and they get more into it as it goes through. And then you get to the spot, the apron spot, the ramp spot. And then people are like, whoa. And then just people popped. It was great. And then just people came up to me later, and like that was amazing. Like they wanted, like, who are these guys, and like where can I watch this stuff? And at the time, it was like, well, you can't watch it anywhere because like there's no, you know, streaming or torrenting or YouTube really at that point in history. So it was really difficult to, like, you know, kind of break people's hearts. Well, not really. I don't care about breaking people's hearts about this stuff, but, you know, but yeah. And one of those people, I'm going to say, was John, you know, John Pollock. And I think he really kind of was familiar with Japanese wrestling to an extent. And then, like, he was just like, wow, that's like amazing and stuff like that. I could be mixing things up, some of my matches, but I'm pretty sure this is the match that he was like, I think maybe he came up to me and we kind of just struck off a conversation, and really from there, and then just, you know, now we're pretty good friends in 2022. So that's good. Maybe this was the match that sparked our friendship. So it's maybe that's another reason, like, I said, yes, we can talk about this match.
That's awesome. That is awesome, though, that you had that sort of like outlet to go down to this bar, you know, once a month or whatever, and show people these matches who you knew were going to be genuinely interested in. That sounds,
no, Martin, it was every week we would go.
Wow, every week.
Every week we would go. And this has been told many times, but like John was, it was a licensed bar and restaurant. So John's not legally supposed to be in there. But you know, like Jeff Merrick and Dan the Muscle Ransky, the hosts of the Law and who were hosting these parties, went up to the owner and just said, you know, because I think John's brother was doing like call screening for them at some point. And so they knew John that way, and it's like, oh, we'll make sure he doesn't drink anything, just orders food. Is that okay? Because they'll let families go in there, right? And so they said, it's fine. Yeah, don't worry about it. So as long as he doesn't drink beer or anyone slips him a, you know, a bourbon or anything like that, it'll be fine. And John behaved himself when he was a teenager, not like the raucous, you know, ne'er-do-well that he is these days. But we're going to talk about, Mitsuhara Misawa versus Kenta Kobashi, March 1st, 2003, from the NOAH Navigate for Evolution 2003 tour. I believe this is day 9. This is probably the culmination of this tour. And it emanates from the legendary Budokan Hall. Did you get a chance to go to Budokan Hall when you were in Japan?
No, I don't think I did, actually. I think that it was 2 years ago. Now it feels like 10, doesn't it? But where was that, not the hotel like next to...
No, that was Sumo Hall.
I mean, it was next to one of the famous wrestling venues. I couldn't remember which one it was, though.
It's also next to that famous Irish pub that you and Lisa and I would go to almost every night.
Oh, yeah. And I think John was there one night, wasn't he?
He joined us on one night, yeah. That was fun. But, you went to Tokyo Dome, you went to Korakuen, you went to... Shinkiba First Ring for the Stardom show. I think those are the three venues that you would do. So in the future, we all have to try to go to a show at Budokan Hall. It's probably my second favorite venue for wrestling in the world, like next to Korakuen Hall. Korakuen Hall will always be like the number one place for me, but Budokan is just really special because of all the history in this building. So this is like when NOAH was running Budokan Hall regularly. And this is probably, filled to the rafters, it sounds like, during the course of this match, and rightfully so. Yeah. This is a legendary feud series of matches between Misawa and Kobashi. And let's get into some background for this match. Like, do you have any notes about like the history of the leading up to this?
Well, yeah, because it's a funny one, isn't it? Because they had so many matches together, and even though Kobashi had won a couple of them, it was still, in my understanding, leading into this match, this last match that they had, that, you know, it's still Kobashi hadn't cemented himself as being, you know, on Misawa's level. Is that my understanding? I don't know if I'm wrong there, but, you know, it was still Misawa was, you know, the number one guy compared to Kobashi leading into this match.
That's it. Like, they, you know, there had been times in All Japan where Kobashi had been the Triple Crown champion and tag champions with other people, but he had never won. He had never won a singles title from Misawa. He had beaten other members of the Pillars or someone like Stan Hansen or Dr. Dusty Williams, but he had never beaten Misawa for a singles title. So that was kind of like the only kind of check mark he had to tick off was that accomplishment. And And yeah, so this was you know, built around kind of that idea. And something for those of you who might be parachuting in for this match and you don't know the history of Misao and Kobashi that closely, is that you have to keep in mind in context that these two have known each other for pretty much over a decade at this mm-hmm. point. They started, like, Kobashi started in All Japan a couple of years after Misawa had debuted, I believe. And so he's, you know, like, Misawa is the senpai, the senior to Kobashi's junior to his kohai. So he is Misawa's kohai. So he's like his apprentice and things like that. They form a group called the Super Generation Army together, along with Toshiaki Kawada and some other people. And in the early stages of that group, Kawada is Misawa's regular tag team partner, and Kobashi is teaming regularly with a man by the name of Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, and they have some amazing tag matches, especially with the team of Doug Furness and Bancroft at the Can-Am Express, which I'm sure we're going to talk about that match in the future on this show, definitely with somebody. I don't know, maybe with Martin again. We'll see. Maybe a different guest. But you know, like, it's not until like in the mid 90s that Kawada decides, like, I'm gonna split off, I need to be my own man, and he teams up with Akira Taue. And then yeah, Misawa needs a new regular partner, so he picks Kenta Kobashi. It's the most natural fit at this point, because Kobashi has been rising up in the card and really capturing the attention of the All Japan fans with his, you know, fiery spirit and his you know, his passion as a professional wrestler. So it's really a natural fit. So, you know, but they also have, you know, their matches. They have, in fact, they have two Wrestling Observer matches of the year in the 90s, in 1997 and 1998, respectively. And, you know, between 1990 and 2000, Martin, they face each other in high profile singles matches a number of 16 times. So they have 16 singles matches to their name against each other under their belt already. And Misao had won all but two of those matches. So it's, you know, like, he's the mountain that Kobashi has to climb for this as well. So it's all, this is something you have to keep in mind when you're watching this match. And I think if I had known all this going into watching this in 2003, mm-hmm. I probably would have liked it even more. But I didn't necessarily know that these kind of like granular details so much, but it really helps. Like if you do watch it, like if you understand like their history as partners, as teammates, and then as rivals with one another.
Yeah. I think you can watch this, you know, if someone is just listening to this and they don't know anything about the history, or they've got a loose idea about the history, I think you can watch this and still, it is a good match, not knowing the history of it, but it's like, you just know it there. It just adds more and more to it the more times you watch it, seeing, you know, knowing the history between these two and the tag team and the fact that Kobashi is constantly, because did Misawa not come up with sort of like the, you know, the Emerald Floatation and things like that in the matches that he had with Kobashi earlier, you know, as ways to beat him? Did he not come up with these sort of like bigger moves to beat Kobashi in their earlier singles matches?
Usually he would come up with like bigger moves to beat one of the other four pillars, which would be Kawada and Taue and Kobashi. So like the Tiger Driver 91, where you drop someone straight on their head, is something he developed in a match against Akira Taue. Like Emerald Flosion, I'm going to say, is probably against Kobashi or Akiyama. I can't remember exactly who. But yeah, there's lots of moves that these guys invent just to beat a specific person that they maybe have, you know, hard time beating with some of the regular finishers. So like, you know, maybe the Tiger Suplex and the Tiger Driver are things that did not work against Kobashi after a while, you know, after he became kind of a, you know, a main eventer himself. So the Emerald Floatation is like, for people who don't know, the Emerald Floatation is kind of like you put your opponent on your shoulder and you, in that position, like you're putting them on one shoulder, you're holding them and their head is tucked in your other arm. And then you drive their head into the mat with the side of your body. I think I'm describing it okay. But like, if you see it, you'll know what I mean. Like, I don't know if anyone does it now. I'm pretty sure someone has stolen it in America use it in a finisher, but I can't know. I can't remember if anyone has done that, but it's a good move. We'll talk about the Emerald Explosion for sure. So we're going to be talking about this match in the company Pro Wrestling Noah. And you have to keep in mind as well that in 2000, like Masao was beaten up. He has got multiple injuries. He's dealing with being in constant pain all the time. And so is Kobashi, to be honest with you. But, you know, he was slated to be the ace of Noah. Like Masao eventually realized, like, I'm the biggest star, so I have to be, you know, wrestling. I have to be kind of on top initially. But his plan was always to phase himself out of that position and to make Kobashi the ace of the company, the guy the whole company is going to revolve around. And to that end, he has to put the belt on Kobashi, the GHC heavyweight title. But, you know, you got to keep in mind, like, you know, in 2002, a year before, Kobashi had over 12 knee surgeries.
Yep.
And in this, you know, precipitated a change in his wrestling style. He's a lot slower. He's a lot more methodical. And he uses a lot more kind of like, you know, brute strength in his matches rather than like he stopped doing a lot of the high flying that he would do before, like the moonsaults, which is really like a man of his size doing moonsaults was a bad idea to start with. Like Keiji Muto, who's a bit smaller. He's a big man too, but he's a bit smaller than Kobashi. But him doing moonsaults, not good for his career or his knees as well in the long run. So that's also something you have to keep in mind. So he finally comes back in around 2003, and then they build up for this match, and it's for the GHC heavyweight title. And it's really also to pass the mantle of ace from Misawa to Kobashi finally. And it's interesting, Martin, because like I kind of said on a previous episode of this show that if Kawada had come over to Noah with everyone else, like it would have been interesting, like with Kobashi's knee problems and everything, like if Masao would have finally just said, okay, Kawada's going to be the ace, because Kawada was relatively healthy for the most part during this time period. So that's something I always like to, you know, kind of what if in my mind. So let's get into...
Where do you rate this among all their matches? Because I know some people think that, you know, the All Japan matches are better than this one, but for me, I think with all that history between them, and then especially knowing how beaten up they both are, I mean, what was Kobashi was off for like sort of like 12 to 14 months, wasn't he, with all these knee problems? Then he came into Noah, and then he was off again for another 5 months, and then, you know, he finally came back for this match. And just knowing all that, for me, that's why this is the best one, because it's the two old gladiators going round for one more go around again, and just all the history between them. And I know some people think this is a bit more sort of like not really spotty, but it's more based on just sort of like, you know, all the big moves in it rather than sort of like the storytelling of the other matches. But for me, this one is the best out of their singles matches. I don't know where you rate it.
As far as in ring work, I'd say maybe it's like number three for me. I'd say like, but for storytelling wise, for context, it's probably the best one, because you have all that history. That history culminates in this match. This is, you know, I was going to save this kind of tidbit for later, but this is the last singles match they will ever have. You know, it's this match. They would meet each other in tag matches and stuff, but this is the last time they would ever meet in singles matches. This is also like something like you have to keep in mind. This is something the fans Noah wanted to see. They wanted to see Kobashi ascend to that level. This is his, you know, first and only time holding the GHC heavyweight title. It's also another tip I was going to say for later, but I'll just say it. Like, this is the longest reign of anyone in the history of this company to have that belt is the Kobashi reign. I personally, like, unless you get someone who's, you know, is going to be a star on the level of Kobashi, I would never break that record personally. But you know, you save it for like that person. This is going to be a guy who's going to be as popular as game changing as Kenta Kobashi. And until Noah finds that person, don't ever break that record. But
I agree with that. WH, I think it's hard to see that they will ever find somebody like Kobashi ever again. But yeah, I would definitely not break that for anyone. You know, it would have to be someone really, really special, wouldn't it, to break that record?
Yeah, like. and modern wrestling doesn't really call for long, like, you know, long. I'll say the exact number of days like later on, but yeah. So I want to talk a bit about the card. This is from Budokan Hall. It's from March 1st, 2003. And I'm just going to go quickly over the results of the other matches here. And then starting things off on the show, we have the opening with the older veterans on the show, Mitsuo Momoda and Rusher Kimura taking on Haruka Aigen and Kishin Kawabata. And the first team defeats the second team at 8 minutes and 47 seconds. That's about three and a half minutes too long, in my opinion. A six-man tag team match, Akira Taue, Donovan Morgan, and Michael Modest. Oh, two names from Noah's past there. Defeat Kotaro Suzuki.
Wow, Mike Modest.
Yeah, to Kotaro Suzuki, Takuma Sano, and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi in 15 minutes and 46 seconds. Kenta and Naomichi Marafuji teaming together. Defeat Makoto Hashi and Yoshinobu Kanemaru in 16 minutes and 35 seconds. And I believe that's probably the second best match on this show. I can remember seeing this match when I watched this tape and like thinking, holy shit, that was awesome. This is really when Kenta is really coming out into his own as a wrestler, and his development, like, it's sad what happened to him in WWE in NXT. But if you watch his stuff prior, like especially in this era when he's like one of the best junior heavyweights, along with Marufuji as well. Marufuji is fucking awesome in 2003 as well. But him and Kenta together as a tag team, holy shit, it's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Six-man tag team match, Daisuke Akita and Wild 2, Takeshi Morishima and Takeshi Rikkyo defeat Bison Smith, Izu, and Superstar Steve. There's a singles match where Scorpio, Too Cold Scorpio, defeats Yoshinari Agawa in 6 minutes and 20 seconds. Yoshihiro Takayama defeats Masao Inoue in 7 minutes and 2 seconds, which sounds like it was like maybe 5 minutes too long there, Martin, Takayama maybe to defeat someone like Inoue. Tag team match, Akitoshi Saito and Jun Akiyama defeat Takashi Sugiura and Taemin Honda in 7 minutes and 31 seconds. And this leads us to Kenta Kobashi challenging GHC heavyweight champion Mitsuhara Masawa for the GHC title, which I already said. But I don't know if I got the exact attendance figure. But I think Budokan is probably sold out for this. But
yeah, it looks like it's packed to the rafters, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think this is like a 12,000 capacity building. I'm terrible with numbers. Just the people, shouldn't you know how many people put it? Like, fuck no. I don't remember fucking the exact numbers. Like, math was never my strong suit. Like, numbers are like, you might as well be asking me to look at fucking, you know, like Einstein's theory of relativity in depth, you know, anyways, cage match rates this at 9.84, it was out of 10. With 440 votes for this match. And Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer newsletter gave this, of course, 5 stars.
I think they say he had it did as much of the year in 2003 as well.
Yeah, I think that's for the voting from the readers voted this match of the year, obviously. So I think it just got so much buzz, Martin. Like, I remember people like, you know, on the DVDR forums or the Observer forums, just people going like absolutely crazy about this match, and rightfully so. Just of course you're gonna get the people out there who also like, oh, it's overrated, it's not a 10 out of 10, it's a 4.5, because wouldn't some of these moves actually kill a human being? Like, okay, it's fucking wrestling, okay, and you need to just get a new fucking hobby then if you're gonna be like that to me, in my opinion. Yeah.
It's funny hearing you mention some of the names that are going through the card there. Morishima is someone who, from a UK perspective, he came over here quite a few times, sort of like 2006 to 2008. I think it was when he was also doing his ROH stint. So, yeah, I saw him wrestle a few times. And then obviously around that same time period, sort of like 2006, Doug Williams and Too Cold Scorpio were the Noah tag champs. So I think they came back and did a number of shows around the UK. So we got quite a lot of Noah representation on sort of like UK shows around that time. So it was good that I got to see Morishima wrestle. Yeah, I was in quite a few tag matches with Mohamed Yane as well. I remember he was always over here as well. So it was good that we got to see those people, because this was around the same time as the wrestling channel, so you were seeing them on TV, and then they were doing sort of UK shows over here, so that was always pretty special that they'd fetch them over.
Yeah, I never got to see them live in Toronto, any of these guys. But I had seen them in Japan, because I lived in Japan in 2000, so I got to see some early Noah shows with all these guys in when they're younger, especially like someone like Morishima. And he's kind of a sad story, like how he ended up, kind of not being able to cope, not being a wrestler anymore and stuff like that. But anyways, let's get into the match itself. So Kobashi comes to the ring first in his awesome kind of black purple robe. This is, looks like he actually went out and I hope he didn't actually do this, but it looks like he went out and killed a bear and made the robe from a bear. Like I hope it's fake fur. Just my personal thing. But he comes out
to me at WHA if it's fake. But it is interesting that he's changed now that he's in Noah. He's wearing the sort of like black purpley type gear rather than the orange that he's more synonymous for. I'm assuming that was a conscious decision that I'm in a different company now and I'm going to change my gear up.
Yeah.
I suppose with Misawa, he was so synonymous with sort of like the green and white that he couldn't really change it. But I suppose for Kobashi, he was, it was a statement of intent that he was coming into this company with a new gear and he was going to be the top guy in the company.
Yeah, him and Akiyama went from like his blue tights to wearing all white, which he keeps to this day. So like Kobashi was also like, okay. At first, Kobashi was wearing kind of like his orange colors with like black accents. And then he just switched to like just going pretty much like kind of black with purple accents to his gear. And I'm kind of torn. I do love his orange All Japan look very much because of this. It's this classic, it's simplicity. I think it fits him for whatever reason. Like the color orange just fits him so well. But like when he changed, I was like, oh yeah, fuck, he looks cool. Like that's awesome too. But he comes out to his Noah theme, which is called Grand Sword. I love this theme song, Martin. I just think it's so epic.
Brilliant.
So epic. And then I made a note that his ring attendants are Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, one of his regular tag partners in All Japan and one of his best friends in real life. And his apprentice, the man known as Kenta. And for those of you who don't know, like Kenta's full name is Kenta Kobayashi. But because there's the pronunciation is so close to Kenta Kobayashi, they just say, you know what? You're just going to be Kenta. And you're going to be, you're going to be apprenticed to Kenta Kobashi, which is kind of funny because actually, if you think about his background and his style, Kenta should have been apprenticed to Toshiaki Kawada,
It's so funny seeing how young he is here, because he looks quite quite grizzled compared to this sort of like young babyface Kenta we see in this match.
He looks mean. Like apparently him and Marufuji, when they were like doing training in the Noah dojos, like you didn't want to be in their class because they apparently were like, beating the crap out of people, the rookies all the time. So that's apocryphal. I don't know if that's actually true or not. I one would hope not, but yeah, we'll see. Anyways, Misawa comes out, and as he is of course, the GHC champion, his music is of course called Spartan X, his legendary theme that he got to keep. And his seconds are his regular tag team partner Yoshinari Ogawa and a very young Kataro Suzuki. And I always love seeing who's around ringside and who's like the ring attendants for each wrestler when we talk about these matches, Martin. Because like, oh shit, there's a Takao Mori, oh there's a Jude Akiyama in the early 90s and stuff like that. And then like thinking about, wow, Jude Akiyama does not have hair anymore at this point. So I got to meet him, before, like at an All Japan show at the merch table. And unlike British wrestling merch tables, I was not taken advantage of, Martin, as a fan.
I'm glad to hear.
That's maybe the only reference I'll make to that situation right there. But let's get into the match. And
Before we get into the match, though, can we? One of the biggest myths, I think, around Japanese wrestling, I think it's been accentuated by this narrative that you get from the likes of Jericho and his books, and maybe Fergal Devitt's probably said it before, and the Young Bucks and all the Western wrestlers, that, you know, Japanese fans are very polite and they just clap and they just sit on their hands, and they do, it's just really weird because they're silent for most of the match and they just ooh and ah and clap a little. Oh my God, this fucking crowd is absolutely molten from them coming out here, and you're just like, let's just forget all that stuff about Japanese crowds being quiet and polite, because they are going absolutely crazy. When
you're in Japan, what do you think? Like, you have an actual live experience, and you've been to, you went to the Stardom show, you went to all New Japan, and you went to a Noah show. Like, I don't like, this is like a myth. I've always thought it was a myth when I started watching just tapes rather than, like, let alone going to.
Yeah.
Like, I think people like Jericho and like the Young Bucks and Fergal Devitt, like, you know, like Finn Balor, are all like saying shit like this because maybe they're quiet for your matches. Maybe they're polite for your matches. That's not true. Like, I've seen people go crazy for like Young Buck matches in Japan and Prince Devitt matches in Japan. So I don't know why they would perpetuate this idea. Yes, they're more polite than Western fans, and that's something I enjoy because I don't want to hear fucking fight forever, clap, 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 or, you know, this match is for one fall, fuck off, okay? Yeah. You know, like, I hate that shit. I would probably hate most British wrestling fans, it seems, from, like, the height of Britrez. It seems like when I watch, you know, matches from that era, I'm just like, oh my God, you people are driving me insane. Like, I think I have to meet maybe the Ogdens beforehand and become friendly with them before I watch a wrestling show with them, because I just might have a negative view about them as far as that goes. That's just me personally as a wrestling fan. I want to watch the wrestling show. I don't want to have to listen to other wrestling fans trying to get themselves over at shows. Like, it's something like it, that's, you know, if you do it, it's fine. If I'm not there, I don't care. But, you know, like, around me, like, I'm not a big fan of it. But anyways, yes, I'm not looking forward to going to any live wrestling shows with Western fans in the future, because I just know I'm just going to be like comparing them to the much better fans I was seeing shows with regularly back in Japan. Mm. So yes, it is a myth.
I like the demographics though in this as well. When it zooms to the crowd, you've got everything from like kids on parents' laps to like really old people. You know, the demographic is so wide for this match. You know, it's obviously a draw for like all ages.
I mean, wrestling has always been, I feel, more mainstream in Japan than in anywhere else in the world. Maybe Mexico as well. I'd have to I can't say in Mexico, but definitely more than in North America in terms of like being accepted as kind of like a real sport, as opposed to like, oh, that shit is fake, obviously, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that adds to its wider appeal to people, because like, you're not, your intelligence is not insulted by soap opera antics. And listen, I'm all for, you know, a good soap opera in wrestling, as long as it doesn't insult my intelligence too badly. But like, one thing I do get drawn into with wrestling is that it is realistic. So like, the trends to making it more like Western wrestling, especially like in companies like, you know, New Japan, really don't sit well with me in this day and age. But no, this is not something we have to worry about in this match, Martin. This match is as realistic as it's going to get. So right away, it's, you know, the crowd is molten, as you said, Martin. And right away, you know, they just start going at it. Misawa ducks this rolling back shot from Kobashi. Kobashi just like figures, I got to try to get this match over with as quickly as possible. He goes for one of his big strikes. Misawa ducks that, thankfully for him, because I think if Kobashi connected, he would have like sent him into like the future, you know?
Oh, yeah.
so like, that's good. And from there, they lock up and start a strike exchange, followed by this really nice, you know, for guys who are like in their 40s and like, you know, basically have the joints and you know, the joints of like people like, you know, in their 70s, they do a nice chain of holds and counters, and then they do this until you get to the stalemate position. That's very commonplace in Japanese wrestling, and this is much to the delight of the fans at Budokan Hall, Martin. Like, you know, they're clapping for all this shit because, one, it looks good, and two, it's with these guys they know are legends, but like legends who are like, you know, just kind of being held together by spit and tape.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think the crowd can appreciate that they know perhaps they're just past their prime, but they're still able to put on a brilliant match for them.
From here, Misawa is able to take Kobashi over with the fireman's carry. Then he applies an arm lock. And one thing that's really great about this match is the psychology evident here that obviously Misawa wants to target Kobashi's arm, especially his lariat arm, and kind of weaken the devastating effects of his strikes that, you know, if he gets hit with a chop or he gets hit with a lariat, then it's not going to be as bad because, like, Kobashi's arm will be, you know, a lot less strong. So I just think that's really, you know, this comes obviously is born out of, like, they know each other so well. Misawa knows what it's like to take a series of chops from Kobashi. He knows what it's like to get hit with that lariat.
And it kind of harks back to one of the earlier matches when it was Kobashi doing the same thing to Misawa, that he was, like, working over one of his arms, so he loses some of his striking ability. It kind of harks back to, I think it might be the 97 match where Kobashi is sort of, like, working over one of Misawa's arms.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, you know, anytime, like, I'd say from like 97 on, like, you really see like this idea of, like, you know, Kawada, Kobashi, Tawi, like, really being able to counter a lot of what Misawa is doing because they're so familiar with it. They've experienced so many of his moves that, like, I have to come up with a smart. It's just like if you watch their matches, any of these matches in sequence, like, if you just take Misawa, Kobashi, you watch one, their history as a tag team in sequence, and then move into their singles feuds, you'll see like a natural progression of like, oh, that they are learning from each big match that they have with one another. And this is like the culmination of that. But yeah, early part of this match is, you just, for people out there, it's basically just Misawa outsmarting and out-wrestling Kobashi. And this is punctuated, you know, really early on with Kobashi just being dropped on his head early on by a backdrop
and
driver.
And we're like 5 minutes into the match, aren't we? We've already got one sort of like crazy head spike. Yeah. Also, Masawa's like 40 here and he's still, you know, doing all this. He's still athletic as fuck, isn't he? You know what I mean? Sort of like somersault reverse sequence and things like that. And you're like, wow, this guy, you know, is wrestling like a guy 10 years younger.
And he's got the body of, like, I'd say 6-year-old, like, who's been through a lot. Yeah. He's this is the era where he's not as, you know, like, as big as he would end up being. But he's definitely not the Misawa of, like, even like 97. Like, it's like in 98 or so. Like, I feel that you really start Misawa, like, not being able to work out as and stay as a Sylvette as he is, a lot of people like think of him in his prime. You do see him like getting kind of the belly there. And like, it's cause like he's drinking more. He's taking a lot of painkillers and he's not working out as much. He's also the president and owner of the company. So he's got a lot of responsibilities and working out is not one of them, unfortunately. And, you know, but he still looks good enough in this match as far as like the aesthetic aspects of it go.
Yeah, definitely. And I always find it a bit tricky also as well, you know, because obviously we all know what happened to Misawa, and then obviously Kobashi's body broke down, and I always sort of like feel bad in a way, sort of like glorifying these matches and stuff considering what happened to both of these guys. But at the end of the day, life's about choices, isn't it? And, they chose to carry on doing this, and this is what they knew and stuff like that. So I suppose I forgot to take that into consideration when I'm watching these.
My feeling is that, listen, like, the matches that I watched, no one died in them. And I think if you ask Kobashi, do you have any regrets about anything you did in terms of like your body? He's like, he'll probably tell you no. Like,
yeah,
no.
They do it all again, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I think also Misawa would say the same thing. Like, he, like, you know, just for people who haven't listened to the Misawa biography episode I did, like, he wrote a note to be given to, if he died in the ring, he wrote a note to be given to the person who might have, like, you know, been in the ring with him to say, this is like, I don't blame you. This happens in our business and this is the path of life I chose. So if I died in the ring with you, don't blame yourself. Please don't do that. And that helped the person who, you know, unfortunately was involved with his death, Akitoshi Saito, like he was given that note and like, you know, and helped him not commit suicide because this guy was gonna sounded like he was like on the verge of committing suicide because he felt he killed Misawa. And, you know, it's a lot of things. It's like that contributed to his death. So, I mean, and that's something Misawa, he consciously wrote a letter to in the event that what happened to him happened. So there you go. I mean, that's none of the matches but the basic thing is like none of the matches I'm covering or reviewing has anyone dying in them or led to their deaths, I feel. Yeah. So I kind of watch these like guilt-free in that sense. Wrestling is wrestling. Definitely. Like, yeah. If you know, it's like MMA, you're going to get upset or the NFL. Okay, I'm going to get upset at all these people who have brain damage and stuff like that. I wish it didn't happen, but you know, that's their choice kind of thing. Like it's kind of a slippery slope, but Kobashi does get spiked on his head pretty early on in the first five minutes of this match. He smartly rolls out to the ring to prevent being pinned, but you're talking about Misawa being in his 40s, being banged up, but still being agile as hell. Well, Misawa decides to follow. He does this by ascending to the top rope mark, where he launches himself onto Kobashi, who's on the floor with a diving elbow smash. Unbelievable.
I know, yeah, and the crowd just absolutely lapped this up, don't they? Going absolutely insane. Because when you are watching this, you kind of forget this is two sort of like older men who are completely broken down with the stuff they're pulling out. And, you know, that's just the initial part. I mean, we're going to be talking about an even more insane bump to the outside in a bit.
Misawa decides to follow this flying elbow by hitting a rolling senton off the apron onto Kobashi, who's still on the ground. But the action returns in the ring where Misawa hits a missile drop kick from the top rope, followed by a frog splash where he gets a two count only. But he then decides to go back to the arm with an arm bar on Kobashi. But fortunately for Kobashi, he's able to get to the ropes. I'm going to say the next 4 to 5 minutes is basically Misawa just imposing his will onto Kobashi. And this happens until Misawa misses a splash from the apron to the floor. So Kobashi's on the floor again. And Masao's going to do another splash or dive, or some kind of dive onto him. And Kobashi moves. And then using Masao's own momentum, Kobashi then chops him in the back of the head into the steel barricade, which results in Misawa being busted open around his mouth and chin area. Like you just see this trickle of blood start coming out of
that area. Oh God, he fucking eats that barrier, doesn't he? It's like, it's lucky there's no sort of like slow-mo replay or anything on that, because he literally, I know it's mainly his chin, but watching it, it just looks like he literally eats that barrier face first, doesn't he?
Like he's so lucky he didn't bite his dumb tongue. I think that would have just been terrible, but it's like, he's probably thinking maybe I should have started wearing a mouth guard before this match or something.
He didn't even get any respite. He literally gets like 5 seconds to catch his breath before Kobashi's back on him again, doesn't he?
Yeah, Kobashi, you know, while on the floor, decides to hit him with a half Nelson suplex on the ringside mats. There's all thick mats, people. That's hard floor pretty much under like, I don't know, about maybe an inch or two of padding, which is not much, you know. And so from here, Kobashi is able to take control of the match. And the focus of Kobashi's offense is to work over Misawa's neck, which plays into the fact that his finishers are the lariat and the brain buster and the burning hammer. So these are all the, you know, moves that focus on impacting the head and the neck. So that's really smart. And Kobashi, you know, takes the match to the elevated ramp. So you have to keep in mind for the Budokan shows, Martin, like this is not something All Japan did. This is something that Noah did, I think, just to set themselves apart from All Japan. And I personally feel like gives kind of, you know, the ring a kind of a special look if you have like this kind of ranch. This is something that like the WCW used to do for their big shows, right? For their pay-per-views.
Yeah. Are you a fan of the ramp? I really like it. I know WWF have never used it, but
no, they did.
It does make you think of WCW. Oh, did they use it?
They used it in Toronto in Maple Leaf Gardens. There was a ramp. Like,
oh, wow.
It was the only, like, when you see house shows from the 80s of W, like, they didn't keep it for, you know, after a while, but like, I'd watch like house show footage from like Boston Gardens or Madison Square Garden or Maple Leaf Gardens. Like Maple Leaf Gardens had this ramp, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? That's cool. Cause you can do so many innovative things from the ramp, which we're going to talk about. But, you know, from here, he takes him to the ramp and he hits, you know, on the ramp, he hits Masao with a DDT, which can't be fun for either man. Back in the ring, Masao reverses an Irish whip into the corner and goes for a monkey flip, but Kobashi grabs his legs and then smashes him like and propels him face first into the top turnbuckle, like not helping the matter with his chin and his mouth being busted open here.
And I think you even see here, he's sort of like when he's on his back, sort of like there's a bit of spit mixed with blood and it looks absolutely revolting.
It's pretty gross, especially like what we know now about, like, you know, about, you know, we think about all of the, you know, pandemics and things like that out there these days. Kobashi then hits two consecutive half Nelson suplexes. One of his favorite moves is not the German suplex or like a full Nelson suplex, but the half Nelson suplex, which I think looks even more devastating because it's like there's less control, Martin. It doesn't look like there's much control with a half Nelson suplex. And then
and when you see people in the crowd, even for like sort of like these minor moves, like the suplexes that he's doing, they're not the big finishers, are they? But everyone's like going crazy for them. Just seeing Kobashi do it.
Oh, yeah. I think that happens with anything with like people hitting signature moves, because like you kind of go to a wrestling match and you see a certain person, it's like, I want to see that person do this move, and this move. And if you get it, then you're like, yeah, so happy. From here, Kobashi decides to kind of get kind of a break for himself, and he puts Masao in a full Nelson submission hold, mixed with the body scissors, you know, and this, of course, more pressure on Masao's neck. But you got to imagine, like, Kobashi just needs, like, I need a bit of a break here. You know,
yeah.
I need to stop hitting so many moves. He's probably, what is this? Like, we're not even like, maybe like we've hit the 10 minute mark now. And it's just like, these two guys probably feel like they've been wrestling for like an hour.
Oh yeah. Cause it doesn't start off slow, does it? They're all out for the first 10 minutes of this one.
From here, Kobashi starts chopping away at Masao's head and neck, and Masao falls to one knee. This starts to, you know, the part where Masao gets really pissed off at Kobashi now. And then he just basically, you know, rallies himself. He just starts no-selling Kobashi strikes. And this crowd goes absolutely apeshit for this stuff. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is absolutely brilliant, isn't it? Because he's doing like his Hulk up moment sort of thing. And Kobashi's like still trying to get him down. He's like, no, I'm not having any of this shit. You know, you pissed me off now.
And from here, like, you know, Masao just starts firing back with like elbow strikes and Kobashi's like, you know, hitting them with chops and stuff like that. But, you know, fortunately for Kobashi, he comes out of this and he hits Masao with his own massive backdrop driver head spike that gets a 2.5 count for Kobashi. It's not enough to put Masao away, though. And I would almost say, Martin, like, you know, halfway through this match, maybe at like the 12-15 minute mark, we're pretty much hitting what I would call the crescendo of the match, which is usually like the last, you know, 5 to 7 minutes of a match. We're getting it halfway through this match.
Oh yeah, because that's the thing. It's not this match. It's like, what is it, like 40 minutes long or whatever, and it flies by, doesn't it? It goes by so quickly, and I think that is because, like you just noted there, we'll be in like 10 to 15 minutes in the match and it feels like they're going for the sort of like last 5 minutes of the match when there's still about 20 minutes left.
Kobashi goes for another backdrop driver, but Masao reverses it and hits Kobashi with a German suplex. Kobashi gets up but ends up getting hit with the tiger suplex. There's an elbow by Masao, a rolling back chop by Kobashi, a rolling elbow by Masao, which finally sends Kobashi back down to the mat. So they're just pulling out like all the moves, all the exchanges that they would do in the last, you know, 5 minutes of a match. They're pulling them out. And this match is about 34 minutes long. And it's just amazing that you would think, okay, this match is going to go, maybe it's going to be like 20 minutes max because they're hitting all these moves. No, we still got about another, you know, 10, 15 minutes left in this match. So from here, Masao goes for the Tiger Suplex 85, which is where he gets the guy kind of like a sleeper hold, and then he takes him over in a back suplex. But Kobashi, he goes for that, but Kobashi blocks that. There is another exchange, and they block each other's strikes, and then Masao attempts a Tiger Driver, But Kobashi blocks that. So if you're someone who's watched like All Japan in the 90s and watched these matches from All Japan between these two, this is like, this is so dramatic, Martin. This is just so much like, oh my God, like this, he's going for this, but Kobashi knows how to block that. Kobashi's going for this, but Misawa knows how to counter that now. He won't get hit with that. It's just really fucking amazing. Like, so when I say like in ring, it's probably my third favorite match, but like psychology, storytelling wise, it's probably the best one. This is why I'm saying this, because it's like, everyone talks about like, you know what, like Easter eggs, right? Or like, you know, like callbacks. This match is just full of callbacks before that term got played out. This is so badly in like the last, you know, 5 years in wrestling that, and you don't even realize you're seeing callbacks necessarily. You're just like, oh, this, you know, this is storytelling. This is just like two wrestlers who are masters of the form of the craft, just doing what they do the best.
And also, even if you haven't, you know, even if you haven't seen the other matches, if you know a little bit of history about them, you know, Misawa's going for his big moves and Kobashi's blocking them. So it's that whole storytelling that, you know, perhaps when he was a younger wrestler, he couldn't block these moves, but now he's showing the crowd that he's got Misawa figured out here.
From here, Misawa hits Kobashi's neck with several vicious strikes. There's a tiger driver that he gets to hit on Kobashi, which only gets a two count.
Two and a half, yeah.
Two and a half count, yeah. Misawa does end up hitting the Tiger Suplex 85 with a bridge for a very, very close two count. And we have to keep in mind, like, Martin, we're not going to say this every time, but, like, every kick out is just met with, like, applause and cheers. And at some points, you can also see people in the crowd. The crowd is amazing to watch because at some point, you're going to see at least one person jumping out of their seat, pumping their fists in the air like they're Alan Farrell or something like that, and clapping. And it's just awesome to see, especially in this, you know, this day and age where we don't necessarily get to see that in Japan right now. It's just so nice to see that, if not experience it, but to see it like back in like 2003.
They build this crowd. They play this crowd like an absolute fucking fiddle, don't they? Because they, every sort of like big move and every sort of like kick out really, really means something. It's not like, you know, how we get today, like with Davey Richards and Johnny Gargano spamming these kick outs and burning the crowd out. They do everything timed to perfection in, because the level, you think it's loud when they first come out for the entrances, but the level of the crowd, they just keep building it and building it and building it, and everything's just timed to absolute perfection in this match.
Another tiger driver gets a 2.5 again as Misawa just continues to wear down Kobashi with one pinfall attempt after another. So that's now Misawa's strategy. He's like, I'm just going to try to hit him with my bombs. Everything, and hopefully, and hopefully this is gonna finally put him away. Misawa tries to hit Kobashi with the Emerald Flosion because he thinks that's it. I gotta bust the Emerald Flosion out. But Kobashi is able to power out of it. He knocks Misawa into the turnbuckle, and then as Misawa's momentum carries him out of the turnbuckle, Kobashi hits him with another half Nelson suplex.
Oh my God! And this is when the crowd start really getting behind Kobashi because they start chanting his name, don't they?
I think people are thinking this may or may not. They're not certain that this is Kobashi's. This is the time that Kobashi's going to finally defeat Misawa for this belt. So there is that drama that he's not going to do it, right? So now at this point, like you and I can speculate, we can theorize that, okay, this is where they think, oh my God, especially the Kobashi fans, the people who want to see it, they realize we might be witness to history here. We might get what we want. And then when that happens, Martin, when I see that happen myself, if I'm at a wrestling show, like, oh, the result I want to see happen is gonna come to fruition. Like if I have doubts about it, and then I slowly come to the realization that, oh, what I want to see happen is gonna happen. Like I just, my emotions just kick into overdrive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And what I love when it does cut to the crowd after, like, you know, a big move's been blocked or a big move's been hit, you know, the look, the expressions on a lot of the audience faces is like, wow, I can't believe this is happening in this match.
So from that half Nelson suplex, Misawa gets back right up immediately and charges at Kobashi, but he walks into a sleeper suplex. So he gets into a full sleeper hold And then Kobashi just takes him over. That can't be fun to take.
No, not at all.
And drops him right on Misawa's head. And both men are down on the mat. Like, they just been going at a pace like they were, for a modern context, like, if you're, like, imagine Okada and Omega, like, having, like, their match. But they're, like, you know, they're, like, 20 years older at this point, and, like, have the bodies of people 30 years older. That's the pace they've been going at the last 5-6 minutes. And they're just, like, exhausted at this point. But this crowd is not exhausted, Martin. This crowd is
not at all.
They're
That's
just
keeping them going, isn't it, throughout this, yeah.
Both men get up, and as they do so, Misawa goes for a diving back elbow, but Kobashi responds by hitting a lariat to the back of Misawa's head for a near 3 count. They both charge at each other, and Kobashi hits a running lariat for a close 2. So now Kobashi's, like, busting out the lariat, and, like,
yeah, it's his turn to get on top now, isn't it? And his turn to, like, start firing the offense at Misawa after Misawa's been on top for so long.
Yeah, but the idea of, like what Misawa was doing earlier with, like, the working on the arm is paying dividends here, because, like, these are not normally, probably at this point, you would think that these moves, these lariats, would be taking out Misawa. He'd be getting pinned, but he's weakened the arm enough. Or it's still devastating to get hit by them, but they're not killer blows at this point.
Yeah.
Kobashi picks Misawa up and goes for the brain buster, but Misawa reaches the rope and the move is blocked. Kobashi tries to suplex Misawa, but Misawa lands on his feet on the entrance ramp and suplexes Kobashi over the top rope onto the ramp. This Kobashi is not a light man. I gotta say, wrestling is cooperative, but at the same time, like, Misawa has to manage this man's weight, like, with the ropes in between them, which I cannot imagine makes it easier.
No. And you know, Kobashi isn't going to be going up light either, is he?
No, he's, I don't think he can, Martin. I don't think his knees would allow him to go up light. From this point, okay, Kobashi is on the apron. Misawa is back, is in the ring. So Kobashi starts getting up, and Misawa decides, I'm going to hit him with the elbow suicida, which is a tope, basically, using the elbow as your striking point. So he hits him with the elbow suicida by diving through the top and middle ropes while Kobashi is on the ramp and just kind of hitting him, more like, kind of looks like a slider move, right? Instead of like a dive. And that's one of the great things about this ramp, is you can do moves like this and it looks fucking cool.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, also having the ramp there also allows them to do this next fucking move, which is, this is the move of the match coming up here, isn't it, where the crowd just literally explodes.
So they've been wrestling for almost like 27 minutes at this point, Martin. And they're exhausted, but they're getting up. Misawa's up first, and he tries to go for a tiger driver on the entrance ramp, but Kobashi blocks that. But I'm sure, if in retrospect, maybe he should have thought of just taking the tiger driver on the ramp. Yeah. Because what happens next? Kobashi fights back, and Misawa elbows him. And then Misawa's facing away from the ramp. His back is to the drop-off point, basically. And then he hooks Kobashi's arms into the tiger suplex. And you're thinking, if you're in the building, you got to be thinking, nah, that's not going to happen. That's crazy. Who would do that? But Misawa hits Kenta Kobashi with the tiger suplex, a release tiger suplex from the fucking ramp to the fucking floor. And
absolutely incredible. Incredible. Every time I see this, I still go absolutely crazy every time I see it.
And this is the move. Like, when this happened at O'Grady's, people went like apeshit. They were like, what the fuck did I just say? Oh my God. Like that. And I'm pretty
still
sure.
All these years later, it's got that effect.
Oh yeah. I watch this match and I still think, or I watch a GIF of this particular move. And I just think, huh, they didn't die. Yeah. Either of them.
Yeah.
Especially Kobashi. The fact that he agreed to this move beforehand is just like, wow. Like, the trust. Yeah, I was thinking about, like, the trust that these two guys have built up with one another.
Oh yeah.
To be able to say like, yeah, I trust you, you know, to do this move done to me as safely as possible as you can, you know, after, you know, 25 minutes of just brutalizing each other and not being the most cognizant person in the world at this point. But yeah, it's this crowd. And I think all the other wrestlers at ringside are just like dumbfounded at what they just witnessed. And
yeah, because you see all the photographers sort of like rush around, and then you can see the wrestlers who are either cornering either of these two, or just the wrestlers that are there working like sort of like ring crew are just like, oh my God, this is just insane. And when you see wrestlers have that reaction, you know it's something that's, you know, ridiculous.
You get to see that a lot in All Japan and Noah, Martin. Like, there are points where like you just see these spike drops on people getting dropped on their heads, and people like debuting moves like, you know, the Tiger Driver 91 or the Gonzo Bomb or the Burning Hammer. And like some of the wrestlers around the ring, they don't know that these moves have been invented or going to be debuted, and they just pop. I love seeing that as well. I just like seeing the other wrestlers like, whoa, like, and then they're probably thinking, oh my God, do I have to take that at some point?
Ugh. Yeah.
So both men are exhausted. They're like, this takes almost as much out of Misawa as it does Kobashi. I obviously Kobashi takes the brunt of the impact of this move because his control, his fall is not controlled at all. Let's just throw that out there, Martin. This is not a controlled fall.
Not controlled at all. No,
he is lucky he didn't fly further or hit the ring post with his head or anything. He's just very, very lucky. But the ref, you know, the ref comes out, he checks on them, just make sure they're both okay enough, and then gets back in the ring. He starts the 20 count. And this is not a ghetto book, New Japan fucking 20 count either. Masao gets back in first, and it's a logical 19 mark that Kobashi gets back in, and the drama is just unbelievable. Where because
he barely gets back in, does he? Just after the 19, he just barely gets in, and the crowd just is like, ooh.
Well, the other thing is like they don't like just waste this idea like they do in New Japan. It's like I've seen you guys like they'll do multiple like 19 counts on the floor in one show, and I was like, why would you do that? You should save that so it's more dramatic. No one believes that it's going to be a count out finish, especially in Noah and All Japan in the 90s, because Baba basically, you know, the philosophy was like that's done. We're not doing that ever again. Or if we do, it's going to be special. And they didn't do anything like that in Noah, up to especially not in a title match. So like no one's good, you know. So like it's oh my God. But if he was counted out, Martin, you would believe you would not necessarily be disappointed because what you saw beforehand that led to him being counted out. You know,
yeah, that move is enough for him to be unconscious on the floor, isn't it? For more than 20 seconds.
Who's going to complain about it? Like, what fan is going to be like, oh, I didn't come here for. Wait, he got Tiger Suplex off the ramp onto the floor and he didn't die. So that's pretty awesome. I saw history. That in itself is historic enough. So, like, it makes sense for, like, to do this kind of a spot of the 19 count with after a move like that. Back in the ring, Misawa hits a jumping knee to Kobashi's face for a one and a two kick out. Misawa hits two hard back elbow strikes and then is able to plant Kenta Kobashi with the Emerald Flosion. One, two. Kobashi kicks out, Martin. This is the first time. This is like Misawa's super finisher now.
Yeah.
And Kobashi
the first
kicks
time
out of
he's ever been kicked out of, and just you can just see the like I was talking about the expressions in the crowd. Just everyone's just like dumbfounded. They're like, "Oh my God, he's kicked out of like you know the move." And this is what I mean about them working them like a fiddle because they just know that this is going to get the biggest reaction out of everything they've done tonight.
Misawa goes for the Tiger Driver 91, the head spike version of the Tiger Driver, but Kobashi thankfully blocks it. Yeah. they charge at each other and bounce off one another, and Kobashi hits another layered for a close two count here. Finally, and this is we're basically at the finish of this match, Martin. Finally, Kobashi is able to get Misawa up onto his shoulders in the torture rack and the Argentinian backbreaker, whatever you want to call it. And from here, he hits his super finisher, the Burning Hammer, which is probably the greatest name for a move in the history of wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
For the one, two, 3, the crowd goes crazy. Kenta Kobashi has pinned Mitsuhiro Misawa to become the GHC heavyweight champion and has finally defeated Mitsuhiro Misawa to win a singles championship. And this match is 33 minutes and 28 seconds long, and it's fucking awesome.
It is absolutely fantastic. Fucking brilliant. No, like, forced fake epic like you see nowadays. This is just two of the best, all-time best. Going for one more go-around, you know, in front of this capacity crowd, and it's just absolutely fantastic. Could never, ever get bored of watching this match. You said it's like 33 minutes. It zooms by in about 5 minutes.
This, like we said earlier, this would win Wrestling Observer Match of the Year. Kenta Kobashi would go on to have the longest consecutive reign as GHC Heavyweight Champion. At Martin, he was champion for 735 days.
Wow.
That's over 2 years. Yeah, or close to 2 years, right? That's over 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over 2 years as the champion, and in one of Noah's biggest, you know, period, you know, box office periods of, you know, like, you know, they're very successful with Kobashi on top. And just, I think the perfect, you know, kind of exclamation point on his career, because it kind of, you know, unfortunately it doesn't really get much better than this, except for, I'd say, the match with Kensuke Sasaki that he has at the Tokyo Dome for one right. of Noah's big Tokyo Dome shows that they have. Like, that's it. That's this and that Sasaki match are the peaks of his career. And then it just kind of, like, unfortunately deteriorates. And I hate saying that. I hate thinking about that period of his career, Martin, but, like, it's okay. Like, as fans, like, he's retired now. He seems very happy. He's married. He has kids. He enjoys just being kind of an ambassador and doing work for Noah as a commentator and things like that. And I'm glad that was that's his life now. And I'm glad he seems like he's not taking any more big bumps. Thank God.
No, thank God. Yeah, he always seems very happy, doesn't he? Whenever you see pictures floating around of him, he always seems like, you know, he's got massive smile on his face. He seems quite content to be to be living his life now and be done with wrestling.
Yeah, and I think he's transitioned really well, like, better than a lot of people out of wrestling, out of being an active in-ring wrestler to being involved in wrestling as he is, because he is a legend. People want to see him. Like, if I get, I think I got to see him. I can't, like, sorry, my memory is terrible, but, like, I did get to see him live as, you know, appearing at a show, at an All Japan show, actually. He did an appearance for an All Japan show that I went to, and I was just, like, so happy, Martin. Like, I got to see him. Like, yeah. I didn't care that he was in the ring wrestling or not. I just got to be in his presence. And, like, that to me is amazing in of itself, because of the amazing career and matches that he had, and the kind of the emotion and entertainment that him and Misawa brought me, especially. So, yeah, like, any final thoughts about this match?
I mean, there's so many superlatives you can throw at a match. I mean, this is just absolutely fantastic wrestling at its best. It's really hard for me, and I'm the same with films. I can never narrow down, like, my top number one favorite film, and it's same with wrestling as well. But this has got to be in top five of all time. Like, it's like a Goodfellas or an Unforgiven. It's one that I can watch over and over again, and I wouldn't necessarily say it's, like, number one, but it's definitely in that conversation. Just absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I know Kobashi did come to the UK for maybe two matches, but sadly I did see Misawa wrestle in a six-man, so that was, but obviously, you know, the good days were long gone by that point, but good seeing him actually in the flesh. But yeah, sadly I never got to see Kobashi wrestle live. I am really jealous about that. But yeah, just, if you've never seen this match, if you don't know the history of it, it doesn't matter. Obviously, it adds a lot more to it. But even if you don't know the history, you've got to just... It's free on YouTube. I think there's about 17 different versions of it on YouTube. Yeah. But you've got to go and watch this match. Just absolutely fantastic.
You know, what's kind of funny is, like, I did see Kobashi wrestle once in 2000 in the tag match. So I got to say that. But, like, you know, it's ironic is that our mutual friend, Benno, Deathmatch Richard, has seen Kenta Kobashi wrestle in ROH against Samoa Joe, and that's That seems so unfair to me.
Oh no, he never likes to bring it up though. WH said he should look a Kobashi in person.
Yeah, we should bring it up because he's really embarrassed. He doesn't like to brag about that. He saw, you know, he won a lot, some kind of raffle or some shit, and got to see this match for free. Essentially,
it was at the UK. He won the raffle at the UK show that I'm referencing. That I saw Masao in that tag match. Me and Benno didn't know each other at the time, but we were both at the same show. I think it was 2005. Yeah, International Showdown, and that's when he won the raffle and then was able to go across and watch Kobashi. Joe.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure you know. If he's listening to this, that Benno right now is just like smiling, beaming right now. Benno, go watch this match. Go right now to watch YouTube and watch this match. If you haven't done it to prepare for watching this, but you should go do it right now. And then go watch Joe and Kobashi again if you want to think. But you know, Martin, thank you so much for joining me on this show. I've had a blast talking about something that's out of like the normal parameters of the show, but this fits in. It's essentially an All Japan 90s match, just under a different banner. But I had a blast, and if people enjoyed your appearance on the Long and Winding Railroad, where can people find you?
Oh, well, of course, every month on the British Wrestling Experience, me, Benno, and Andy Ogden, looking at what the European wrestling scene is currently right now. And then obviously me and Andrew Thompson on Bushman Thompson's Wrestling Adventure also talking at retro wrestling. So you'll be able to find both those on the British Wrestling Experience feed.
Also, like Martin and Andrew Thompson have a t-shirt for their show, which I own and which I bought from store.postwrestling.com.
Indeed.
And, you know, you got to plug this stuff, Martin. You got to show this stuff like I do every week, every time I get a chance. In fact, if you go to store.postwrestling.com, you can also find two t-shirts that are for my shows, the Post Perez t-shirt and the t-shirt for this show that is very popular, especially in the United Kingdom, Martin. Many of the people who bought this t-shirt are from your part of the world, including some people over in Ireland. They know who they are. People know who they are. Anyways, if it's good enough to travel across the pond, then it's good enough for people here in North America. Go to store.postwrestling.com, buy the Long and Winding Railroad t-shirt. You can get it either black or white. I prefer the black, but like I know the white is very, very popular as well. So it's up to you. And you can find me every month on the Long and Winding Railroad. This is episode 19, Martin. That means the next episode is 20. And that means it's a biography. Wow. It's a biography episode. Every fourth episode is a biography episode, and we're going to look at the fifth pillar, the unofficial fifth pillar of All Japan Pro Wrestling, and that would be Jun Akiyama. That's our next episode. It's going to be a close up look at the career and life of Jun Akiyama. I'm very excited about this. I've kind of confirmed my co-host for that, but I'm not going to say who it is on this show. It'll be a surprise for people over on the social medias. I'll announce it there. Just as soon as we record it, I'll announce who it is. But I don't want to kind of put the cart before the horse, so to speak, here. But yeah, you can also find me on Post Perez every month, usually with John Pollock, but sometimes with a guest host. And of course, like when the MCU on Disney Plus restarts again, then MCU Later with myself and Wei Ting, which you can find exclusively at the Post Wrestling Cafe. So you do need to sign up to become a patron over there. We're going to talk about whatever comes up next for the MCU, which I believe is Moon Knight. Have you been watching the MCU, Martin, on Disney?
I have indeed. I actually thought Hawkeye was the best out of all the series.
Yeah, that was awesome. I really love the promise that show gave us in terms of like what's in store for the future, especially with Florence Pugh as Yelena Belova and with Hailee Steinfeld as Kate Bishop. I'm just so excited to see what happens next. And even like I want to see more Jeremy Renner as Clint Barton. I just think he was absolutely fantastic in this
definitely.
Particular show. Yeah.
I do love that the Brits are ruling the Marvel the MCU at the minute. Obviously, Tom Holland, you know, Spider-Man. Then we've got Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange, and then obviously the brilliant Florence Pugh, who, after watching, she was easily the best thing about Black Widow, wasn't it? And I was like, oh yeah. It'd be so good if we got more of that character. And it looks like that's what they're going to be giving us. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to her either having her own film or becoming more involved in some kind of super team or something like that. So, yeah, really looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to kind of delving into 2022's offerings for MCU in terms of, like, Moon Knight. Apparently that's next. Oscar Isaacs as Mark Spector / Moon Knight. I'm curious to see what's going to happen there. Miss Marvel with tons of stuff coming out, and I'm very excited. Definitely. And if you're watching it, Martin, maybe we can get you on MCU later, though I don't know if it works out with your schedule, because usually we record late on Thursday night.
Yeah, so. I'll try my best. We'll try and do it on a non-working week for me. But yeah, I love the show. I love all your shows. And yeah, definitely, you mentioned the T-shirt. I own the Post Purist one, and I wear that quite often. You know, really, really cool T-shirt. So if that one's still available, definitely head out and get that one as well.
It's always available, Martin. It's always in stock. So we print that to order. And can I just tell you, I told Andrew the story like last year, but during lockdown, when we were in lockdown at my work, like, we still let people do curbside pickup. I was wearing your T-shirt, and someone said to me, "Oh, what's that?" And I was like, "Oh, it's for a wrestling podcast that's run by two people I'm friends with." And they're like, "Oh, where can I find?" I told them, and then they said, "Okay, I'll give it a listen. That looks like a cool shirt." So hopefully you got a new listener, because I was wearing the shirt. Advertising helps people. Advertising helps. So anyways.
There you go. Thank you so much, WH. It's been a blast talking to you.
Always. Brilliant. I can't wait to
talk to you, mate.
I can't wait to see you in person again. You and Lisa, your wife. And I had, just so people know, like, the last kind of live wrestling experience I had was with John Way, but also with Martin and his wife Lisa. And I gotta say, like, the times we went to the quote unquote Irish pub around the corner from Sumo Hall, those were like some of my biggest highlights from that trip. But not even the wrestling itself, just like hanging out with you two in that pub, just talking until what, like 2 a.m.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, we absolutely loved that trip. And what was it? The Kota Ibushi's favorite chain restaurant as well was
right. Oh, Caesarea
Hotel as well. Yeah, I was going in there as well.
It's great times. But we'll do it again in the future for sure. But on behalf of Martin Bushby, I want to thank everyone for listening, for supporting the show. And until next time, goodbye.